Where I make wine, I like to push the limits of where grapes ripen.
People just need to trust their own palate and not be concerned about what a critic says or what they read in the paper.
As a master sommelier, I mean, for me, at this point in my life, I'm kind of more in the Yoda stage.
My dad used to say when I was a little kid that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
I had a moment when I realized the power of wine. One day at a dinner, a bottle of Mouton Rothschild 1955 was opened and it just like silenced the whole table.
I'm so happy when a friend of mine sells a bottle of wine. And I love to brag about the wines that are being made by our friends because I'm so proud of them.
Farming is agricultural warfare.
I can't imagine doing anything else.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 170.
And this week we feature Ron Chandry and his daughter Rebecca from Chandry Vineyards in Coombsville. This podcast and the accompanying newsletter is our last for the year 2015. We've brought you interviews with over 250 winemakers from all over the world, and it's our intent to continue to extend our reach to add new and old winemakers alike. You'll find in the current newsletter all of the Ray's picks, which features all the wines posted in the 2015 newsletters. Here's hoping you've enjoyed reading these bits as much as we've enjoyed gathering them for you. Over the years, we've met many Napa Valley winemakers, but Ron Chandry was a big favorite. We interviewed Ron and his daughter Rebecca at the family home in Coombsville in February of 2014. Ron had a big smile for everyone and exuded classic wine country hospitality. His wine is excellent, and frankly, we feel very lucky to have met him and talked with him. Ron passed away on November 13th. While in the coming weeks we have several brand new interviews to share with you, we felt it was a nice idea to remember a guy that left a big impression. So cheers to Ron Chandry. Take a listen and crack a smile. I'm here with Ron Chandry and his daughter, Rebecca Chandry Griffin, and we are here in Coombsville, and we're here to talk about wine today. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty
great,
good.
Great. How can you do anything but good here in the Napa Valley?
I would agree. And I wish our listeners could see the view we have, other than just on its own how spectacular is. We can see mountains upon mountains off the one window. And of course, we have the sunset to the west, which is with this fiery sky. This is a great evening. And thank you for inviting us to your home and your winery here.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. Premier Napa Valley is a really special time of the year for us. And so it's fun to get to reconnect with folks like yourself that come to visit us every year and help us spread the word of who we are and what we're all about.
That's what we like to do. I'm going to give you a shot. And grab a piece of cheese.
Always good cheese.
Mm. So, Ron, you and I met, I believe, 2 years ago at Premier, at specifically the Coombsville Tasting. And I was intrigued by your wine. I love what you make. I think you make a great wine. And this was just after Coombsville became an official AVA. But I want to turn the clock back a little bit. So tell me a little bit about, well, you and I were chatting when we came up here. One thing I didn't know is that you were a fireman. And there are a lot of firemen who became winemakers. I think one that I know of. Tell me a little bit about that. How did that happen?
Well, I retired after 30 years in the South San Francisco Fire Department as the assistant chief in the fire department. And my wife and I, had looked up here in Napa for a number of years. We always liked the region up here. We had no intention of making wine or growing grapes. We liked to drink the wine. But we had no intention of doing anything with the viticulture and doing any winemaking. But we ended up buying this piece of property, 20 acres, and I started looking around after I retired. And 20 acres was a large piece of property. I knew I always wanted to have a little small garden, But then the rest of the property, we looked around at a number of different things to do with the extra property. And the best thing that I could come up with that was cheaper than landscaping was to plant grapes. And anyway, as it turns out, we were very, very fortunate. We did plant about 4 to 5 acres of grapes, and we were very fortunate that we had some very good advice as far as the rootstocks and clones that were the best for this particular hillside region of the Coombsville AVA. And that's how we got started. We originally were selling our grapes to a number of different wineries here for about the first 5 years. And then in 2006 is when we decided to put our own label on the on our wine. And we decided to go into making our own wine. And at that time, we happened to find Don Baker, who is our winemaker to this day. He kind of got drawn up into the family. We found him actually at a church dinner. We were looking for a winemaker, and as it turns out, they always put bottles of wine out on the table. And as it turns out, the group we were with, as usual, the wine disappeared very quickly, so I had to asked the priest who was there if there was any more. And he says, I can do better than that. He says, I'll bring you a bottle and I'll bring the winemaker. And I talked with Don, explained where we were at in the Napa Valley. And I told him we were a small, small operation. And if he would like to come out and take a look and see if he wanted to make wine. Well, he came out, and that has been history. He's been with us ever since 2006, and he does an excellent job.
I just love this bit of history, you know, firemen meeting a winemaker at church. That's not typical business. That's part of what a family business is all about, though, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, the family business happens because we were passionate about showing what we were doing, but not only that, the learning curve of being in a family business is just that. How do you find out what you don't know? You go to people who you think might help you. And so never being afraid to ask, my dad found Don, which was a godsend. Don didn't know that when he said yes, it was a life sentence. We keep him well fed with prosciutto and Parmesan cheese. That's the key to keeping a happy winemaker. And so for that alone, I think, is the reason why he stays.
He gets paid in wheels of Parmesan cheese. I like that idea.
And he does an excellent job.
He does a very good job. Again, I really like what you're making. And that's what first attracted me once I met you and tried what you had. It definitely impressed me. Now, Coombsville was a long road to see Coombsville become an AVA, and Rebecca, you were involved with that process.
Yeah, I was. So back in 2007, when we were launching this and harvesting the fruit for our first vintage, well before it was a released wine, there was an initial drive or petition to make the area an AVA. It was with a different group of folks, and the name that they chose was not Coombsville. They, for many reasons, chose a different name. But part of the problem with that is that one of the very first criteria to becoming an AVA is that the area must be named and the name must be recognized locally, nationally, or regionally. Nobody called this area anything but Coombsville. So when the petition was first submitted, it was rejected by the TTB, and they said go back and rethink because they had some opposition to the AVA. So fast forward a couple of years, and Tom Farella and myself and a couple of other folks, Tom was writing the petition at the time that I was starting the association. I wanted to help promote and market the area, and most of the wineries out here are really small. And by really small, I mean our largest producer at the time was 2,000 cases, most of us well under 1,000. And so the best thing was to pool money for marketing. And so then I got together with Tom, he was writing the petition, and we decided to do the whole thing at one time. So it was a wonderful kismet of timing that happened, and started reaching out to some of our neighbors. Our very first Coombsville AVA meeting was held here under our pergola in the patio, and we had 10 people show up. And we decided that that was enough. And one of the first things we did was have a tasting, kind of what we were talking about earlier in the evening, is that one of the great things about Premier Napa Valley Week is it gives us winery folks a chance to get out and spy on our neighbors and see what kind of wonderful things they're doing. Well, this was kind of the Coombsville way of getting to see who's out there, what they're doing, and whether this was going to make a go of it. It was a tremendous success. Everybody was making great stuff. We knew we had something really special, and so then began the Coombsville Vintners and Growers Association.
It's pretty exciting to be able to say you started something like that, though, isn't it? It's got to make you feel pretty proud at this point.
Yes, I'm not really sure yet. Still being knee-deep in the trenches of an all-volunteer organization, I'm extremely proud, happy, privileged to be working with so many other great minds in the wine industry. We've got some great winemakers and great wineries out here in Coombsville, and the ability to have those people as not only neighbors and partners in the wine industry, but as people to turn to for information and knowledge sharing, I consider myself pretty blessed.
That's very nice. And part of this goes along to what, Ron, you and I were talking about before, about the idea of people helping each other out. Now, just very quickly for our listeners, Coombsville is due east of downtown Napa, for lack of a better way to put it. So one thing we talked about is how this has this incredible rural feel, but you're just really hop, skip, and a jump from the city. You're talking about this idea of people helping each other out, especially in need, being small growers. Could you give me a little more about that? Yeah.
This area, as Rebecca mentioned, is pretty unique. Most of the people over here are very small producers. I would say most of the people over here probably have 5 acres or less of grapes that they grow. Where they produce their wine. There's very few. There's probably about 3 or 4 larger producers over here, but it really is a small community, as Rebecca mentioned. Everybody is always willing to help out each other in any way that they can, whether it be during harvest, if they need extra workers, or if they need equipment such as tractors, bins, whatever you might need. Each winery over here is kind of like a little sounding board. I can remember back about 3 years ago when we had a very difficult year. And what had happened was we had a lot of rain the 1 year. And what was happening is we had a tremendous canopy. So what was happening was that the canopy was creating a shade over the grapes, and with the sun that came out after all the rains, the grapes were getting mildew and mold. So there was a number of us that got together, and we said, hey, we need to trim back all the canopy to get as much sunlight and to dry out the grapes. And that was the week that we had 110-degree temperatures, so we burnt all one side of the grape. So we worked all together with that. But it is a community, really a community effort, that everybody helps each other out over here. And
you were today on your tractor at a neighbor's house.
Actually, today I was over to one of the people that are going to be hosting actually the parking lot for Premier Napa Valley here in the Coombsville region. They needed to have it the place mulched up. And anyway, I took my tractor over there. His was broken, so I ended up going over there. But it's like that, and it really is. You know what? It reminds me back in the old days of the fire department. It was really a family. People didn't have to ask anybody if they needed help, either laying cement or doing whatever they needed to do with the house. If you needed somebody to help you out, they were there the next day. You had 15 or 20 people, and we all got together, had lunch, and it was, the kids were playing out in the mud and everything else, but we were all together as one family, and that's basically what it is over here also.
That's kind of the essence of American farming, though, really, isn't it? The idea of the spirit of helping everybody out, to seeing that the crops come through, good year, bad year, and obviously always fighting or working with Mother Nature.
Don't fight Mother Nature.
No. But it is actually, it's not what you can do for yourself all the time. It's seeing that you can help out each other. And by helping out each other, you make everybody better around you.
I'm just a little curious if a little of that spirit in you came from being a fireman, though. I mean, that's giving. As making a living, that's, you don't just do that. That's, you've got to be a giving person, I would think.
It was a great career for me. I loved the career in the fire department. It allowed me the time to spend with my family a lot more than if I had an 8-to-5 job every day, although I did work 8-to-5 the last 8-9 years. But it still was good. It exposed my kids to a lot of different people, and they matured over that too. I think they did very well.
I think that my dad said it best a moment ago when he said that the agricultural community, the farming community, and the support and fellowship and camaraderie that exists in agriculture exists in the fire department family. And so it was something that came very natural to us when we came to the Valley, finding that here. It was a comforting place. Being in a business that has that as its motto is a privilege.
We're pretty lucky.
Well, okay, I'm done. Got to go. Wow, that was great. that's a great statement. You're kind of coming back home in a different way, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we joke a lot that family businesses, you don't really want to be in them, right? So your children run away from family businesses. My brothers and I ran to this family business. It's not a bad one to be in.
Well, it's not unusual, too. A lot of children who are born out here in the country, if you will, run away, too, until they realize what they ran away from.
Yes.
Then they come back like crazy people. Yeah. Like, what was I thinking?
It really is. And the family, the community is an important part of our lives. It's just who we are, how we grew up. We grew up in a community that we had little pockets. I mean, we had the Italians were one area, we had the Irish town, we had a little bit of everybody. However, I don't mean to say that. It wasn't segregated, though, because everybody, we all got together, whether it be for the parades, whether it be for the festivals or whatever, and everybody pulled together. But at that time, things were still, everybody had their own history and traditions that they grew up with. And they were very, very important to each ethnic background. And now we've gotten to be more of a melting pot, which is great. I think the
Napa Valley is a great place to raise my kids. Yeah. I have two little boys that are intricately involved in helping as much as a 10 and 12-year-old can be involved. If you ask them, they absolutely work at the vineyard, and they help make the wine. And so giving them that sense of family and community is an important part of helping them grow up and pass on the wonderful life that my parents were able to give to me. So I think that the Napa Valley inspires that. It inspires family tradition. It inspires legacies. And so to be a part of that is fantastic.
Well, one thing we're constantly informed of is that the Napa Valley Vintners Association is made up of about 80 to 85% families.
I think they're over 90 now.
Are they? There you go. What does that say?
It's yeah, exactly. And so, you know, being a newcomer, I laugh. My dad talks about where we grew up and being fourth and fifth generations in a small town. So I absolutely understand how the Napa Valley works. We have been in the Napa Valley for 25 years and we are still the newcomers to the Valley. And I respect that. And I'm proud to have my family being a part of that. And we'll be the newcomers until the next guy comes.
It's quite an honor when you get right down to it, regardless of how many years it is. So let's talk about the wine. And now, generally, you're making 100% Cabernet. That's what we talked about before. But you're telling me about some other areas you're getting into.
We have a couple of different projects that we are involved in. We have just started making a rosé wine that my daughter was very integral part of getting that done this year. We are also thinking about doing a white, a Sauvignon Blanc, probably with a little Semillon in it for next year to give us a little bit different varieties of wine. And we make a Cabernet Syrah blend, and the Syrah grapes we get from a very, very good vineyard over here at Ancien. It's the Haynes Vineyard, where Ken Bernard and Curtis Stoll are over there, make excellent wine. And we do an estate Cabernet Sauvignon. We also have in the works that is in the barrels now, two vintages, and we are going to call it the Nello, and that's going to be a Meritage blend with the five different varietals, the Cabernet Franc, the Petit Verdot, the Malbec, the Merlot, and the Cabernet Sauvignon. And we are looking to do that only the years that the grapes say that they're ready to be made. We don't plan on making a lot of that, maybe 100 cases, if that, which is more than enough. But it is a little bit of a homage to my father, who passed away before he could see any of this come to fruition. But we're kind of excited about the Meritage blend. Hopefully we should get it out and bottled maybe in 2015, when it's ready.
When it's ready, yeah.
When
kind
it's
of
ready.
Like when the grapes are ready. Yeah.
When it's ready.
You know, one thing I didn't touch on is how many cases you do right now.
We do just under 1,000 cases total production, about 800 actually right now. So most of that is in our estate cab. That's our flagship. And then we do a little bit of the Coombsville Cuvée blend. And then, you know, just hints and smatterings of the other stuff just to kind of round the portfolio out. But the flagship is the cab. That's the baby of the property. And that will always be our primary focus.
Sure. No, that makes sense. The white, is that going to be your premier grapes?
Hopefully, knock on wood, we're still looking for the proper source. But we'd like to keep it in Coombsville.
That would be nice. Yeah, good luck with that. I hope that works out really well for you. What are you making the rosé from?
Cabernet.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a Saunier of Cab.
I know it might have been a little obvious, but I want to make sure.
No, that's no, okay.
It is.
And this is going to be your first vintage of
this? This is our first vintage of a rosé, yeah. I happen to really like rosés, nice dry rosés. And one of the things that Coombsville has in its wine character is amazing aromatics. And for a rosé, I think there's nothing more intoxicating than a good rosé with great aromatics. So one of the first things I did when I joined the family is I said, well, by the way, we're going to make a rosé this year.
Oh, by the way.
Hmm. I think I announced it 2 weeks before harvest. So.
Oh, nice.
And so we just went along.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Did what we were supposed to do.
Well, she's the upcoming generation, so I guess you have to listen to her, right?
Yes, you're right.
And Rebecca, how long have you been working for the family, working with the family, however
so,
you like to put it?
So been working with the family since its inception, right? So since we started the planting. So I was out in the field with my folks fertilizing and pruning and all of that the whole time. But as we like to say, always had my day job. And just recently, this past October, I left my day job and joined my family. It was a wonderful welcome home to have them excited to see me come on board.
What a great way to put it. A wonderful welcome home. And sounded like you had a pretty good job as it was anyway.
I had a pretty good job.
Pretty
I was
good
very
job.
Happy
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, good for you. Congratulations
thanks,
with that.
Thanks. I'm excited. I'm excited for where it's going. I'm excited to get engaged and represent, be able, you know, I've spent many years representing other people's brands to the best of my ability all over the country. And so it's really wonderful to finally get to represent my own. So I'm excited.
It's kind of nice to look to the future for something and to see where you can go and where you could take it. One thing that you told me when we met, Ron, was about the label. And I've told this story a few times, but I'd rather you tell the story regarding how the label came about.
Actually, the label that we have for our wine, my daughter Rebecca was the one that was one of the persons that was the impetus for the label. But the label, actually, we come from a little small town in Italy, in northern Italy, in Tuscany, and the town is called Guercia, which means oak in Italian. So what we did for the label is we incorporated the oak leaf, and we put a small cluster of grapes in the oak leaf. And actually, each one of the grapes represents a member of the family. So that was important to us. There is also a fallen leaf on the label, down in the left-hand corner, a silver leaf, that represents my dad, who was the patriarch of the family, who passed away before this came about. The colors, people were telling us blue was not a very food-friendly or wine-friendly color. Well, we chose the blue color because actually that is the two colors of the flag of the town in Guercia in Italy. And it is the flag that they have in the church in Italy, the two different colored blues. And then we put a black stripe between the two different colored blues just to modernize it a bit. And then the capsule has our oak leaf, which a lot of people think is a grape, but it really is an oak leaf that is on the capsule. So that's how that came about.
I think it's nice that this business was started about family, and we met our winemaker at church. So I think that having the label represent family and our heritage was really important. We had a discussion. My brother just got married not long ago, one of my brothers, and my other brother is recently engaged. So we have to do some edits because the logo actually has a grape for each person who's part of the family and a part of the business. And now we have some additions to add. So I have some, you know, re-trademarking and retooling to do, but we're happy about that.
It's expansion in a good way.
Yes, it's expansion in a good way.
It's neat when there's a story behind the label. It's not just a label. It's a mark of your history. It is your family flag that connects up to your family from Italy, right?
Yes, it is. There's also another little part that we do here. That we have some vines here that actually they came from our little town in Italy. And anyway, what we do with those is we have the grandkids each year. They harvest those grapes. And
that's how my kids are learning viticulture.
They put one or two bunches of the grapes that come from my family's little small vineyard in Italy in every picking bin that we do each year. So we have a little bit of our family and culture is into our Cabernet.
That's very
each
nice.
Year.
That's really the whole meaning of family,
right
there.
Yeah. When you talk about putting your heart into the bottle, we do that as much as we can.
But again, your farmers, small production, you know, and family, those are three key elements to really making a great wine. And for my money, I think you really have achieved that. And it'd be interesting to see where you go from here.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. And we're
excited to see where it'll take us.
We're excited, and we're happy. We're starting to get some recognition in the wine. And I think not only for us, but for Don Baker also, who's getting a little bit of recognition, who does an excellent job. But we're very, very pleased with what we are, what we're producing. We wouldn't want to put something that we wouldn't want to have our name behind. That's just the way we do things.
Are you distributed anywhere at all other than?
We have small spattering of distribution from our Premier Napa Valley buyer last year in Nebraska. So Mr. Drini has our wines there, and they're doing quite well. We've just hooked up with a distributor in Virginia, and we're always looking for new distributors to represent. And we don't have a lot of wine to put into distribution, but select placements with the right folks is what we're looking for. So that's what Premier Napa Valley is all about, which is why we're participating. I'm hoping, you know, to help spread the information and get some people to know about us.
I think it's smart that you're involved in it, because to me, right, for that, from a promotional point of view, from obviously supporting Auction Napa Valley from Premier Napa Valley,
right.
But this is a great way to get your name out there.
Right. And, you know, word of mouth for us is important. So that's basically how word's spreading now, is people have tried our wines at restaurants or in shops, or been given it as a gift, which is for us the most the largest compliment someone can pay us, is that they've given our wine as a gift, and then someone will call and say, how do I get more, please?
the hook is in. Yeah, words what you want.
We have been a couple of different magazines. Sunset Magazine did a nice little article on us, too.
So as Coombsville AVA, we've had some wonderful media exposure, which has been wonderful. It's been greatly received.
Matter of fact, yours was, you had put our wine in there, was recommended also in your site.
Because it was
which
good.
We appreciate that.
It still is. Yeah. Well, you have to be a good wine to make it into there. Trust me. The guy who tastes.
I really believe
that. He's a tough one.
That's definitely.
Well, thank you. Can our listeners find you on Facebook?
You can. You can be our friend on Facebook. It's Facebook/ Chandri Family V. And that's SCIANDRI. Family V, like in Victor. And we welcome you to join us. You could always find out there what we're up to. We'll post pictures of things that are going on in the vineyard and places where you might be able to come and see us when we're out and about.
And that would be a cool thing down the road. Do you think down the road you might do an official tasting room of any sort?
You know, you never know what the future holds for us. We're taking this one step at a time, making one mistake at a time. And so who knows, we might stumble over that.
John Schaefer will be proud of you saying that. And lastly, of course, your website for our listeners to find you online.
It is www.chandrivineyards.com. Again, that's SCIANDRIVINEYARDS.
And they could order wine from you directly.
Of course.
Excellent. Well, Rebecca, Ron, thank you very, very much for taking the time and inviting us to your beautiful home here in Coombsville.
Ray, thanks for stopping by. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for stopping by, and enjoy the rest of your week here for Premier Napa Valley.
I'm going to try really hard.
Rebecca's the best. Well, you talk is. More than me. You're good.
You really are good. Learn more by visiting ChandriFamilyVineyards.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2015.